Okay, so I will call this meeting to order, and we'll go through and do the roll call. So pay attention, returning members, because we have some new faces in the room, so we'll get to hear who our new members are and then proceed with the agenda.
Bigelon?
Present.
Nate Bauer. Evelyn Finsgaard. Carrie Santoro.
Here. Present.
Thank you. Leslie Walls. She's online. Allie Englert. Jamie Warwick. She is. Oh, okay. Thanks. Jesse Atencio. Sue Mitchell.
Here.
Wendy Roop.
Present.
Chris Brooks is here.
Here.
Thanks, Chris. Jane Grossclose. Matthew Mund.
Here.
Jill Dewey Davidson. Susie Fry.
Present.
Stacey Howdeshell. Brandy Marrero.
Here.
Katie Miller. Jessica Armstrong.
Here.
Kara Axe.
Here.
Dino Jala.
Here.
Jessica McCallum.
Here.
Jessica Allard.
Here.
Kimberly Knudsen.
Here.
Kat Williams for Brad Crick.
Here.
Lena Krutikov. Janelle Merrifield.
Here.
Phil Jacobs.
Here.
Christina Thompson.
Here.
Amanda Wall.
Here.
Melissa Parks. Here. Trish Winters. Connie Huizinga.
Present.
Samara Tabor. Anyone whose name I did not call?
Emily Nelson.
I'm sorry?
Emily Nelson.
Okay. Thank you. Form was met.
Sorry. Before we dive into the agenda, I just want to say welcome to our new members. Hang in there through the meeting this morning. Some of it might be a little hard to follow because there's kind of a lot of follow-up on things that have been going on before, and then hopefully we'll be able to address any questions you have during the orientation this afternoon. But feel free to participate as much as you'd like this morning, and we're very glad to have you. So could I have a motion for approval of the agenda?
Motion to approve.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion of the agenda, edits, additions? Okay. Any opposition to passing the agenda? Great. Hearing none, we have an agenda. We have approval of minutes from our November meeting. Could I have a motion? Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion of the minutes? Okay. Any opposition to passing the minutes? Hearing none, minutes are approved. And approval of minutes for the December meeting, number 267. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion? Opposition? All right, hearing none, the minutes are approved. So diving into status of pending actions, the Leave Share resolution. For our new members, this is something that started at UAS Staff Council over a year ago now, where we had a staff council member who was a supervisor. He had a staff member who was using the Leave Share program, caring for a terminally ill spouse. The spouse passed on, and the Leave Share program no longer applied during the bereavement period or working through the funeral. So what was obviously an extremely hard time, they had no support, in effect, from the university and their coworkers, and were missing pay as well as dealing with funeral arrangements and so forth. So we took up that issue and realized as well that there was another problem in the way the Leave Share program was written, which is that if you came back into work even for an hour, the clock would sort of reset on being qualified to use it. Normally you have to be out for 2 weeks before you qualify. 2 weeks without pay, then you can start qualifying, start receiving donations. If you come back in for an afternoon to catch your coworkers up on their projects, the clock resets and you go another 2 weeks. So these were two problems that we identified that the Staff Affairs Committee here at Staff Council proposed changes basically to address these two concerns. We took them up through system governance. They were supported, and then we had the Chief Human Resources Officer redrafted the regulations to address our concerns, and the President signed them over winter break. So we have now attached the final ones, which did absolutely everything we were asking for. So this is a huge win. We knew it was coming, but it's sort of just been waiting and waiting and waiting as the wheels turn. So the updated regulations are attached, and then there's also an FAQ where there were a few things that we had specific questions about. You know, if I have to prove that my husband died, what would I have to attach, backup, things like that, things that were maybe not worth specifying specifically in regulations and tying ourselves to that in university regulation, but that came up and needed to be addressed. So Artis Lynch, the interim chief human resources officer, drafted those FAQ for us as well. So I think this is a really great success, and I'm very happy to see it pass. So thank you to everyone who worked on this. This is great. Staff Volunteer Day proposal and resolution. Nate, do you want to do that up here?
Sure.
Thanks, Frank. This is another issue that's sort of been brewing in staff council for quite a while. I think it's been close to a year since we came to a conclusion in terms of supporting the proposal here at staff council. Sort of quickly after that, the last sort of period of Brian Rogers' tenure as chancellor, he supported it as well. So since then, it's kind of been we've been waiting for the current interim chancellor as well as his cabinet to move forward on it in terms of facilitating it, coming up with more details in terms of the plan. It was something that we kind of left open as staff council on purpose because we knew that there would be a lot of details that we wouldn't be able to work out as a body in the proposal itself. So that's kind of been ongoing, and there haven't been updates for a few months. But we did talk to the chancellor of pre-staff last week, and he indicated to us that he has sort of moved forward on seeking advice from other people outside of his cabinet and community leaders, which it seems clear that the university will need the support of people outside our institution in terms of the volunteer groups, charity groups, nonprofits around Fairbanks and around the interior of Alaska. So that's a positive step. Something that we've communicated to the Chancellor over the past few months is that we understand that this is a difficult time. This is something that we heard from Brian Rogers as well, that no matter when this comes forward in times of budget challenges, that it's going to be a sensitive issue, and there are going to be people, whether it's accurate or not, that to question whether it's a wise idea to use university resources on behalf of volunteer organizations in our communities. We as a body feel that that makes sense, that that's a smart, strong sense of investment on the part of the university, on the part of its staff people. But regardless, I think that there are going to be people that have questions, and I think that the Chancellor at this point in time is moving to try and confront some of those questions beforehand, so that when we do feel, when he does and his leadership as a body feels like it's time to move forward with it and institute a plan, that it's smart and that it anticipates a lot of the challenges. So that's kind of where it's at. Any questions?
Say, he shared some of the initial feedback from the Board of Advisors with us, and it was mixed. There was at least one of the people who responded was very supportive, who he said he normally wouldn't have expected that person to be supportive. So one person was very, very supportive, and a couple others raised, you know, the same concerns that we might expect, which is how could you afford to do that with the budget circumstances. So, which I don't think stops it from moving forward. It just means that's something we have to address, basically, which is what we knew when we originally passed this proposal out of our group.
At this point, it seems to me that the criticism is probably more important than the support, because it seems like for the Chancellor's Cabinet to feel sort of uniformly positive about moving forward with it, I think that they have to understand that the plan and the implementation process is going to address a lot of those challenges from a few different layers of the university and the surrounding community, which the proposal is meant to benefit. So I think that that's what we have for an update, which is more than we've had over the last few months. So I think that I view this and we view this as a positive. I think for any new members, the proposal itself that we passed through is not included in the packet, but it's definitely available on our staff council website, and I would urge you to take a look at it. There's some details that it's probably not best to get into here, but it was an important activity over the last year, so. And it seems like it'll have more activity over the course of the next year.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So you said that the next step was seeking outside community support. Is that correct?
So that's what the Chancellor is doing right now through the Board of Advisors. They've basically sent out a feedback form with a proposal to leaders who are already serving the university in an advisory capacity. So
I'm just kind of confused on where it's at in the process.
Yeah, so it's a little muddled, because normally the process, once Brian Rogers had signed off on our proposal, that would have been we're moving forward with it and we get going. But since he did that on his way out the door, and then it was inherited by the interim chancellor, it hit a bit of a snag there, and then also we got, you know, all the bad budget news all at once. So what interim chancellor Powers is doing, like I said, is getting that community leader feedback that will also, I think, make it more possible for him to go forward supporting it as well. And then that will also give us some good information we need in fleshing out the proposal further. Because, as I think you'll remember, our proposal was pretty bare bones. You know, it was a page saying, here's the idea, here are the types of things we would support in line with our mission. You know, here's roughly how it would work in terms of volunteer time, but things like, you know, here are the agencies we will partner with, and here's the days we'll go forward, and here's what you do if you're on restricted funds, you know, all those level of details we haven't gotten to yet. So that, I think, after they get this community feedback, the next step will probably be providing a more comprehensive plan.
So then the chancellor's office is moving it, is doing that, not our body.
The more comprehensive plan?
Seeking the community
support. Oh, yes.
Correct.
Yes. They're doing that. Because they have that conduit set up. So I think right now what our group is doing is waiting. And then we'll see what we get back. The chancellor will share the feedback with us.
As Faye pointed out, I don't know if we at this point have a lot of leverage on this issue because, as she mentions, the person that the leadership that expressed support formally is not the same leadership that we have now. Although Interim Chancellor Powers has voiced, you know, support sort of informally, I think that he feels strongly that this is a good proposal. I think he just wants to make sure that the university feels supported when it as it moves forward with it.
All right, so moving on, you may have seen, especially people who were in office, you may have seen some emails about this proposed city regulation on public safety over the break. Basically with this, there wasn't anything in regulation that talked about our university public safety officers and our university police that said, you know, if they're off campus, if they're just driving along Sheep Creek, say, as part of their loop, and they see something and respond to it, there was really nothing in our regulation that gave them that jurisdiction or that set forth kind of their priorities in terms of, right, you respond to campus things first, you protect the students first, and then, you know, if you encounter these things. So we did share it out for feedback. We didn't get much other than kind of some general, yeah, we think it's a good idea. Basically, it's this regulation matches exactly what we're doing currently in terms of practice. It's just putting the regulation in place so that if it ever were, for example, challenged in court whether or not a campus police officer had the jurisdiction to do that, we could say yes by our own policies and, you know, have that support as well, is my understanding. And so because we heard nothing but support, Staff Alliance did pass a resolution approving those revisions. And so if you have any big concerns on that, I think we could still communicate them and try and change it. But for the most part, that one's moved through. So, which I think just happened with the timeline because there was break and then there was January and we weren't meeting. So let me know if you have any concerns on that. But I think it's pretty straightforward. And like I said, it matches what we are presently already doing, so it doesn't change anything. All right. Do we have anyone online for public comment? I don't see anyone in the room for it. At some point during our meeting, the HR director, Brad Lobland, will be stopping in briefly to share. I think it's probably sharing the performance evaluation form with us again. I believe that's his intent, but his schedule is a little crazy, so we're not quite sure when we'll see him. So with that, we can dive into officers' reports. Let me slide my notes. All right. So again, welcome to the new reps. I know there's sort of a lot running through here, I hope you're not too intimidated and that you don't run away screaming. And feel free to, again, chime in with questions at any point, or if we're talking about something and we don't provide enough backup and you'd like us to discuss it a little more in the context of the meeting, then that's completely fine. Don't be shy. As I mentioned, we have the lead share changes and the FAQ. The search for the Chief Human Resources Officer has been extended, so they're still looking for a new Chief Human Resources Officer, that's obviously a role that impacts staff pretty significantly in terms of how they work with governance groups, what type of policy and actions they take. Just kind of waiting and watching on that one. On the chancellor search, we have, on the chancellor search for the new members, as the staff council president, I'm serving on the search committee for the new chancellor, representing staff. We had, I believe, 41 applicants for the position. We've just gone through this last week and sort of all done a straw poll for the eight that we would most like to advance to the semifinalist stage and interview. I thought we had a lot of actually really strong candidates that I'm very interested in hearing more from, so I feel pretty positive about that. We should be finalizing, so we all kind of sent in our here's who I want to interview, so they're compiling those results. We'll meet on Wednesday to determine exactly who we can reach consensus on and move forward with. We'll do semi-finalist interviews at the end of this month, and then we will determine the three finalists. Once we get to the finalist stage, the candidates all become public information. It's completely confidential up until the finalists are selected. So then there'll be three finalists who will do on-campus visits, probably in early April, sooner if we can manage it. And there'll be, listening sessions and as we did with the interim chancellor and as we did with President Johnson before he was confirmed. I do believe that we will be able to have three strong, viable finalists, so there'll be a true choice. And then we'll help compile all the feedback from the groups and share that with the president so that he can make the final appointment out of the three. A few things moving in Chancellor's Cabinet, Title IX, it's impressive how many students they've gotten trained in things like Green Dot. I think every student athlete has been gone through the Green Dot training now, and I think 300 students in total. The Board of Regents had their retreat last month, and out of that came the strategic pathways, which you might have seen that message from President Johnson. I believe today the actual draft document will be shared, so if it hasn't hit your email yet, we should be seeing the draft document today. And then governance will have a feedback form from system governance going out where every employee basically can chime in and weigh in on that. So I would just stress that in our feedback, it will be important to be very constructive. Simply saying this is even if you believe that it is a terrible idea or horrifying or anything like that, just crying out against it won't make much of a difference. It might be brushed off as sort of just resistance for the sake of resistance because change is scary. So it would be very targeted if there are specific things that you're concerned about. Be very specific in what your concerns are and how you think they might be addressed. And then we'll work to compile that as well and to kind of provide high-level feedback to the president on those issues. It certainly appears to be transformative, but there's also so much that's undefined with it right now. For example, you'll see, lead university in, these are your lead teaching areas for UAS. We don't know what lead means. We don't know what that means in terms of who gets the students and who gets the revenue and who gets to decide what. So there's a lot still undefined there, but I think we're trying to work through it and get some more details, and we'll hopefully be urging that we take the time to do this properly. But I think that the question of whether or not it happens has already been addressed by the president and the board. So I expect that most of our feedback where it will be really heard and will make a difference will be in how it happens. So just keep that in mind as you look for that document as it comes out today. And then I believe if that does come out today on schedule, you should be getting a form for feedback as soon as tomorrow.
Say?
Yes.
Will there be, do you think, a place for the staff council as a whole to weigh in rather than individually?
Yeah, so what we can do is, on the feedback form, for example, we'll be able to sort the results by UAF, sort it down to UAF staff. So UAF staff council could, look at just the feedback from the people we represent. Hopefully when it comes out with the communication, there'll be a bit of a timeline attached. And then if we have the time, we could either do a resolution at our next meeting with specific feedback to make it formal, or we could do a resolution via email, basically draft one and share it and vote on it if we're on a shorter timeline. Or we could also, if we have consensus on some main feedback points, I could do a memo as staff council president saying, here's the staff council feedback specifically. I think we might want to start with that feedback form and see, kind of get a sense of where UAF staff as a whole are weighing in on that and where we may or may not align with staff at the other universities. So, I am unclear as to the timeline. I was supposed to meet with President Johnson last week, but he had complications of shoulder surgery. So you guys might have seen that email about the authority. Apparently he has an IV drip for the next 6 weeks and is sort of scaling way back on his meeting schedule in the meantime. So hopefully that communication will address things like timeline. If it doesn't, then we'll follow up directly to try and get that from probably from Michelle Rizzo. Two other pieces from mine before we move on. I wanted to mention kind of a big news, big success piece for UAF, which is that the 2017 Arctic Council Ministerial will be hosted in Fairbanks at UAF, in part at least. This is basically the biggest Arctic meeting of the year. Every year, it's international governmental leaders, science leaders, all coming together, working on major policy pieces. It's just a really huge deal, and they'll be here in Fairbanks. And they mentioned that actually in part of a big factor in their decision to hold it in Fairbanks was how well we handled the Arctic Energy Summit back in the fall. And for those of you who were staff council members in the fall, you might recall one of our staff highlights at the time was a staff member who was here on one of the bad weather days where it was optional to be here. The meeting was happening at the Regency Hotel. They lost power there. It was everything came to a screaming halt, and she managed to coordinate shuttles from UAF to go pick up all the participants, bring them to campus, had a room set up for them, had catering available, took care of it all, saved the day, and now we see that because we handled it so well, we have this incredibly prestigious meeting. So heroic staff achievement there. And then one other final that we heard at System Governance Council from the president is that we can expect again to see coming through the legislature a guns on campus bill. Like we saw last year, that was tabled. Not sure what it will look like yet, but he believes, again, that the university's best chance of influencing that it will be to be working on trying to get it amended before it gets voted on. He expects that whatever form it is in, it will pass because it's something likely to be popular with the constituents of the legislature, and it doesn't cost them any money. So something to be watching for if you follow the legislature, and if it's something that you are concerned about either way, something you can talk to your legislators about if you have that option. For our new members, I'll just mention, if you talk to your legislators about that, you're not doing it as a representative of staff council. That would just be as a concerned constituent, but we don't engage with the legislature as staff council unless we do it formally through a resolution and so forth and share that, but not as individuals. And I think that is everything that I had. Nate, do you mind if we have Brad? Yeah. Brad, do you want to come up then? So, folks online, we'll get you an electronic copy of this after the meeting. Sorry about that.
I think everybody has a copy. I apologize to the individuals online that I'm not better prepared and didn't send an electronic copy today. We will get that out immediately after I leave this meeting to you, though. So a while back, I talked to you about a new performance evaluation tool. Currently, we have two up on the UAFHR website, and then the president's office or statewide HR has a form as well that President Gamble created when he was here. Some of you know that I stepped away from the university for 5 months and went out to the private sector and then realized, wow, we're a better group of people than the private sector, and came back. But during my 5 month stint out in the private sector, I realized that evaluations are done a little bit differently. And what I learned is we don't necessarily have to look at all of the written information in the essential functions. So everybody has a PD. In there, you have 25% maybe preparing management reports, 25% maybe receptionist duties. What we tend to do here at the university is look at those things and rate people off of what they actually do and how well the PD is written, how well the tasks are written out. And we need to move away more from looking at those essential functions to looking at overall job factors, accountability, dependability, all of those job factors go with any employee in the university to the chancellor all the way down to the bottom. Those job factors can be used for anybody. And so what we wanted to do is create a shorter form that's meaningful for employees and supervisors, but that also is not a long, exhaustive form, because I think a lot of supervisors tend to fill that form out because, one, it's required, and they don't spend a lot of time. A perfect supervisor is going to have performance evaluations on their desktop saved, and every week they go in and update those performance evaluations. That is, now, am I doing that? No, I'm not. Because, one, time is of the essence, and it's really difficult to do that. And so that's the star supervisor is having the performance evaluation open every day, but that's not actually meaningful. The second thing is employees need to give feedback. Employees should have feedback on their performance. And we wanted to incorporate that in there. We do have self-evaluation forms that are out there that departments can use, and supervisors do send those out to their employees. They get feedback, and then they incorporate that into the evaluation. But we also wanted to include on this form a spot where the employee can evaluate themselves as well. The evaluation, this evaluation form, is not to be used as, I filled it out, here you go, and let's move on to the next year. The evaluation form is really a tool to start a conversation. It really should be a conversation starter to say, hey, Brad, you said that under communication, your skill and clarity is outstanding, and I think you need improvement. Let's talk about our disconnect here, and how do I get you training? How do I get you the help to meet those standards and to become an outstanding employee in communication, skill, and clarity? So those, I don't want evaluation forms to be like a Kodak moment for the last 12 months that gets thrown into the file. This should be an interactive process. And it is a development tool. If you've ever been to any supervisory trainings that we've done in HR, it's all about development tools. These are not to capture the employee doing something bad or to recap something that happened that's horrible. These are really about looking back at the last 12 months and then also looking to the future and helping the employee grow professionally. So having said my little HR spiel about evaluations, I kind of want to just go through this form today. And then I'm going to send it electronically through the means, and I'm asking for your feedback. I really want your feedback, one, as a staff council member, and then two, as an employee, and three, as a supervisor, because I'm sure some of you are supervisors as well. This is in draft form. People are asking for it left and right to use it because they're hungry for something different. We also have Page Up coming, the electronic system. This is going to be an electronic process as well within Page Up. And right now it hasn't been decided if there's going to be one form or multiple forms. My vote is multiple forms. The reason is not one size doesn't fit everybody, and some supervisors like to do different types of evaluations. As long as there's a standard, as long as it's an interactive process, and as long as it's being used as a development tool, I don't really have a problem. But it has to meet those three standards. So your feedback is really important to me. It's important to the campus. I just got out of Chancellor's Cabinet where I presented this as well. So I'm pushing it out to the groups and asking for feedback this week. I would ask for a 30-day turnaround time if I could, just because PageUp is rolling out in March, and I want to get, if this is one of the forms that's approved and people like it, I want to get your feedback and incorporate that in there. Just really quick, I want to go through this. It's going to look very similar to President Johnson's form. The only thing that we changed is, well, a few things that we changed is we took out the job duties, so the essential functions come out. The second thing is we changed the rating levels. So I wasn't really keen on not working out, and that was the lowest rating on that form. And really, that's not, if you're not working out, a performance evaluation is not what you need. You need some progressive discipline. You need some coaching, mentoring. You need some training, whatever the case may be, but it's not a performance evaluation you need. So we took those out and changed the ratings to more of a standard, excellent, exceeds, meets, needs improvement, and unsatisfactory. This is going to be totally electronic, and so the form will have, as you go over the communication, so one, two, then competency, three is results. As you hover over these, the definitions will appear for skill and clarity. So there's no question about whether or not you have the right definition. So it will come up and provide those definitions. I do have the definitions printed out, which will be attached to the email right now. And if you want to tear up the definitions, please feel free to. That's up for grabs too. But we've put them into different sections: communication, competency, results, responsibility, character, which is a hot topic, and then leadership and or management, which I find to be really important and something that we need to focus on with employees and as well as supervisors. And so you can see that they're broken down. If you want to delete, you're able to delete. If you don't like skill and clarity, but you want to use interpersonal characteristics, you can delete those. If you want to add to these as your part of your feedback, please do so. This is totally up for grabs. We want to make this meaningful for the employee and the supervisor. If you could go to the second page, and you can see under the employee rating and the supervisor rating, those are electronic drop-downs. So they're just going to be drop-down menus where you pull in the ratings. One of the things is if you get an NI and needs improvement in any rating, then the supervisor has some work to do, and that is they need to come up with an action plan to address those you can't just give somebody a bad rating and say, here's your evaluation, you have some bad ratings, I'll see you next year around this time, hope you make some improvements. It's really about sitting down and saying, okay, you have some needs improvement, what are we going to do to get you up to the level where you need to be or where you want to be? And so, again, it's that conversation starter to get people engaged. So as you move away from the performance factors and you go into the professional development area, this is where, again, we want people to be talking to their supervisors and saying, this is what I want to do career professionally in my career. This is where I want to go, because hopefully the supervisor is going to work with you on that. If it's something you want to do is master Excel so you can do pivot tables and be a data analysis, then that's something your supervisor should help you with. One, if it's in the realm of your job, and two, if there's time available. But we're an institution of higher ed, so if we can push education out in any different venue, we're winning, and that's what we should be doing as a supervisor. So hopefully you're talking about professional goals and discussing those. Personally, as a supervisor, I never put professional goals in here when I'm doing an evaluation on an employee. I always wait till the meeting, and then I go back and update it because, again, it's a two-way conversation. You know better sometimes what you need to develop than the supervisor. The third page is performance goals. I put in here last appraisal period goals because we want to talk about what happened last year. A lot of us get goals and then they're never mentioned again. And so we need to talk about those last performance goals, accomplishments, and then supervisor feedback. You can see that there's only one goal from last year and one goal moving forward. And this will be where you can enter multiple things. But right now, I'm being realistic and saying one goal is probably really good. Some of you are doing two and three jobs right now, and so your goal is to get up, get to work, and get the job done. And I say that kind of funny, and I apologize that you are doing two and three jobs, but we have to be realistic with people right now. And so that's why I put in here just get one goal out there, because that could be a huge accomplishment right now in a 12-month period. Employee review, so the employee signs, they don't have to necessarily agree with the evaluation, they can attach their comments, and then it goes to the next level, and then it's reviewed by human resources for appropriateness. So it is a little shorter than the long form. Like I said, we will leave all the forms out there, but in order to make this more palatable, I would like your feedback. It's very, very important to me in HR. So is there any questions? I know I took a lot of time, but...
No, I think that's important. We'll go to questions in a minute, but would it be helpful for you, Brad, if we did like a feedback form for our reps and then sent you some consolidated as opposed to each rep sending it directly?
Yeah, I am not with this form, but with an old form, I sent it out to about 80 people, and I got track changes from 80 people, and I thought I was going to quit my job. So I would prefer one consolidated form would really help.
Right.
And you could take the form and just do track changes or whatever you want to do as one effort. So.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe, and you guys can weigh in on this, but what might be helpful is if we do a Google Doc with track changes or where you can make comments, suggestions, and we'll do that within staff council. You guys can comment on it, and then we'll, so that way you don't have to repeat things if somebody else has already said it. We can have discussion on the form, and then we'll send a consolidated response, basically, to Brad as a memo saying, here's our feedback as a group. So we'll try and get that up and shared this week so that we can get that 30-day turnaround. Yeah, Matthew.
So I do have a good question just about the larger problem as a whole, and that was that the supervisors weren't necessarily doing the evaluations. And so I know with the supervisory training, we're trying to improve the tools the supervisors have, but on the HR website, it used to be there, and I was just looking for it, and it's disappeared. But there was an evaluation template for the employee to evaluate their supervisor and how well they're doing their job, and that kind of direction on the bottom up. And I don't know if there's any thoughts on pursuing that or.
Yeah, I actually took that off their website Friday because there's no headings on it. And so I wanted to make headings and put some instructions on there. So I we'll put it back up this week. But there is a form that you can give to your employees. It's a self-evaluation feedback form. I did it when I first got the job as a director. The first time in HR, I sent it out to everybody anonymously and asked them to put it in an envelope and slip it under my door. And it's 10 questions. The first question is, my communication is clear and expectations are clear. And the employees say 1 to 10. And what I learned from it is, the things I think I'm good at, I'm not. And the things that I thought I was bad at, my staff said, no, you're okay there. And so it really kind of focused my energy into where my staff thought I needed to be. So we will get that back out there.
And I think, I mean, for supervisors that are good already and they're interested in improving, they're not usually the problem or the, you know, issue currently. So I guess, is there any time that HR is interested in putting that into, like, the supervisor's kind of performance evaluation, is to actually get that feedback kind of formally so that the supervisor of the supervisor kind of gets a hint that maybe the supervisor's not doing their job?
Yeah, we Brian Rogers, when he was here, he rolled out the 360s for executives, which was a really meaningful evaluation. I went through that, and it was 17 people across campus that rated me, my peers, subordinates, superiors. And so what I would like to do after we get this simple form out there and get some training is we could roll out a more of a 180, 360 staff evaluation, which would take a group of staff council and some other folks, but to come up with a meaningful evaluation that is administered and then also too is asking for feedback, because you get meaningful feedback when you're asking people other than just your supervisor, especially your staff. So
great. Thank you.
Yep.
Great. Any other questions for Brad on the performance evaluation at this time?
Hi, Brad. Carrie Santoro with REC. I'm just wondering if, because of where we are right now with budget cuts and stuff like that and people doing multiple jobs, if there's a place on the form that we could add to note that this person is performing beyond their PD requirements, they're taking on additional assignments, doing more stuff, just so that it is a positive reflection for the employee.
Yeah, and we need to address that as an institution, because I don't want people doing two jobs and not being one either compensated or at the grade level they should be. So I don't necessarily want to highlight that people are doing these. What I want to do is tack the problem and say, look, if you are doing two jobs, make sure, one, we have a correct PD so we can get you at the grade level. And this happened to an individual who's two levels lower and had not submitted their PD, and were taking on multiple responsibilities. And that's why I say, when you take on multiple responsibilities or additional responsibilities, there's nothing that says you can't go in as an employee and update your PD and send it to your supervisor. Don't wait for your supervisor to do it. Do it as an employee. And if you don't have access to your PD through UAK Jobs, call our office, because we will get you. But that's what I've been telling people, versus waiting on supervisors, just fill it out, because the supervisors just dump in work. They're not necessarily thinking about, is this at the right level under the Department of Labor? They're not thinking of those things. And so you do make a good point, and I will somehow incorporate that into this form. So.
Right. And we can do that, too, in our staff council feedback, is note that as well. If, you know, we can discuss that and put that forward and maybe make a suggestion as to how we think it would be good to capture that. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you, Brad, for stopping by and for sharing. So I think this is certainly something that staff council is very interested in, and I think the intent of the changes matches a lot of what we've asked for over time, so thank you.
Can I just say one last thing? It's not on the evaluations either, so it's on employee engagement. The chancellor is probably going to be reaching out and asking for a smaller subcommittee. We really want to get staff council and faculty senate involved in employee engagement. And so he is most likely going to ask for a subcommittee, which I'm really excited about, because I think part of engagement is finding out what it will take to be engaged, and we need the people out in the field and talking to the people to do that. So I'm really excited, and I'm hoping he'll do that really soon. So.
Great, and thank you for championing that as well, because I think that's something that we've said is really important, and so...
Yeah, and we're getting hit up with, why is the data, why are we not moving? And I'm just going to be really honest with you. I'm being very careful about how we roll this out, because this is not a safety survey where you say, I don't feel safe on campus, you need to do the walkways better. This is a personal survey. This was personal. For people to fill this out, it was personal. You're talking about your workplace, you're talking about your coworkers, you're talking about your supervisor. So I have been very diligent, and the work committee and the chancellor, to be very careful on how we roll this out so that we don't roll it out and then people feel like they're getting retaliated against or that it's not happy. I will tell you that the results were pretty good as far as working with your supervisor and your coworker, which tells us a lot. There is some disconnects with leadership with any organization, and that's just being more transparent and be better communicators. So there is a lot of oomph behind engagement, but we need a bigger group to help us get there. So I'm excited for the future on that. So, thanks.
Do you want to? Okay.
Sure.
Evelyn, is this any better for you? Great, thanks. Nicole is just moving some speakers around. So we'll move on to Nate.
Sure. thanks, Nate. So I don't have a lot. I understand that we're pressed for time and have a full agenda, but I will say a few things about the Planning and Budget Committee. We've had a couple meetings so far. Since the committee was convened, the purpose and the approach has shifted a little bit, especially as a result of Strategic Pathways, which Faye mentioned. Committee is chaired by Susan Heinrichs, who's the provost, and for those of you who have followed the budget process over the last couple of years, you'll remember that programs submitted reviews, profiles, and then there was a special program review, and then the Planning and Budget Committee sought options from other sources like the Budget Options Group and so forth, and then made recommendations based on sort of ground-up information. That process has been shifted a little bit this year, kind of turned upside down, so that programs will submit at the vice chancellor level, at the director level. Departments will submit recommendations of their own for how their profile could be changed and shifted and budgets adjusted. The Planning and Budget Committee was then in charge of co-signing or approving those kind of changes or picking and choosing which ones they thought were the best and which ones they had reservations about. That was a priority when the committee was convened. Since then, President Johnson has sent out information about strategic pathways and preferences from the Board of Regents. At this point, the immediate responsibility of the Planning and Budget Committee is to draft feedback for strategic pathways from the committee. That's happening on a shorter time scale than the budget decisions that the committee was initially responsible for. That's where it's at. I think, as Faye mentioned, there are a lot of general points that, with regard to strategic pathways, that people are unclear about. To some extent, I think that's on purpose. From my perspective, I think that President Johnson and his leadership are genuinely interested in receiving feedback about the specifics of strategic pathways. I think that that's one reason why we got sort of general and perhaps vague information about the initiative fairly early on in the process. I think, as Faye pointed out, terms like lead campus and focus and I don't think those have been defined, and I think that that's sort of intentional. So feedback from our from the PBC, feedback from staff council. I think that those will all be very important in terms of how these initiatives and how these transformational changes occur. These are sort of on a longer timeline as well. These are not immediate. I think that that's one thing that we discussed in the committee last week, is that these won't be immediate changes. I think that they'll happen over a few years, even 5 and 10 years. So I think another thing to be aware of as we receive more information about pathways today and in the near future, that these are not changes, including to the budget, that will be realized immediately, like this year or next year. So it's an important distinction in my mind. I think that's about all it's appropriate to say about the committee, but if people have questions, I'm happy to talk about it further. I think I will mention one more thing. So the Board of Regents is meeting in Fairbanks in February, and this happened late last year, the last time they met here. I think it's extremely important, and Interim Chancellor Powers has expressed this a few different times. For staff members who have access to changes in the university as a result of a budget, as a result of increased workloads, I think that it's extremely important for the Board of Regents to understand what those changes have looked like, especially as they impact the lives and experiences of students. I think that that's, in my opinion, I think that that's a responsibility of staff members to reflect. I think that we all understand that there are a bunch of different levels and stratifications to the university. And for people like perhaps the chancellor, probably the president, and definitely the Board of Regents, I think that it's very hard for them to access and understand how the university has been changed because of budget decisions at our level as staff people. And so I think sort of the only way that our structure allows for that information to get to them is through the public comment period at the Board of Regents meeting. So I would urge everybody here, as well as your constituents, as staff council representatives, I would urge folks to think hard about what you would like the Board of Regents to know about our experiences as staff people, and also especially how we impact or have access to student experience, and to compose a message to deliver to the Board of Regents. The meeting is the 18th and the 19th of February here.
And I'll just add to, for new members, you might have seen, I think we sent it out to all staff people, but before the last Board of Regents meeting in Fairbanks, Nate put together an excellent guide on how to deliver public testimony with some of the key points. 2 minutes in length, here are the things you know, how you organize it, how you present it. And so maybe we can send that out again in advance of this meeting, and you can share it with your units. But I think it's very helpful as you're thinking about testifying. You know, it helps answer the how do I do this piece, which can be intimidating. So.
We've been assured, you know, Chancellor Powers was a regent himself. We've been assured by folks, including him and President Johnson, that that kind of testimony has a real impact, as long as it, you know, fits within the time period and it's, you know, clear and direct. So sometimes it feels like, I think both if you've been to or if you've streamed Board Regents meetings online, I think sometimes it feels like that commentary is disposable, but we've been assured that it's not at all. And in many cases, that's the information that the regents themselves take the most seriously.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah.
All right, so governance report. We have Leslie Ruffner, is that how it's? Yeah. Thanks. From ASUAF.
Mm-hmm. On behalf of UAS student body, we again want to thank you for including us in your meeting. This meeting, we have several items to report on. The Juneau Legislative Affairs Advocacy Conference will be held from the 27th of February to the 1st of March, and 41 students from across the state, 8 of whom are from UAS, will be advocating for the university to the legislators. We are highly excited for this trip, and as I am one of the people who has organized this, I have a vested personal interest in it, both for the educational opportunities we will have and for the chance to argue for the university. We are currently training to be effective advocates and developing a common message for all students to argue. The second item is student grade appeals. We are highly excited to tell you that we will be coordinating with the UAS Faculty Senate to work on reforming the grade appeals process and making it more accessible, transparent, and fair. We would like to express our sincere thanks to the Faculty Senate for being so open to our involvement on this project. And as stated earlier, the Board of Regents will be meeting here in Fairbanks on the 18th and 19th of this month, and we have been ongoingly encouraging students to testify at the board and hope to again bring the same quality of student testimony that has made such an impact in the past. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, Leslie. Does anyone have any questions for ASUAF or any comments? Great. Thanks again for coming, Leslie. And we have Orion Lawler, who is the president-elect of Faculty Senate.
Hi. So, Faculty Senate, we've got a couple of policy updates in progress. Actually, there's an increasing list of them. So we've been working our way through the Blue Book, the Faculty Evaluation Handbook. I'm in charge of a student academic misconduct a policy for instructors to follow, essentially. We've updated the general education requirements, so we have a classification list system. This is where instead of having to take Art, Music, Theater 200, just, you know, there's essentially no wiggle room there. Now there's a reasonably long list. It's not so long, it's tough to advise. So there's a half dozen courses you can take, like an Alaska Native performance would satisfy that portion. So we've tried to broaden the list of courses that students can take without having to be such a long list that it's basically impossible to advise people as to what they should take. So I have to agree with Nate that the big one is the budget, and the state of Alaska has a much, I mean, so I just looked up, the price of oil is just over $30 a barrel, and the estimates are that the state budget breaks even at about $110 a barrel. So there's definitely a huge hole that we need to figure out. I mean, that's a serious challenge. The university's budget is, we have a lot of sources other than state revenue. The state revenue portion is definitely gonna get hit pretty hard. Even the best case, so under the governor's budget, we're still looking at a $20-30 million gap, which is, we really need creative solutions to figure out how to come out of this thing stronger. And I was kind of surprised. So we had our Faculty Senate, Faculty Alliance retreat held via teleconference to save on travel dollars. And it was surprising to me, hearing from the entire leadership team, that there isn't a really clear vision of where to put the university, you know, 5 years from now. And I don't know if that, so this should be sort of, so don't worry, there's not some secret plan in the works to radically transform things, but we really need to help figure out what the plan is, what the long-term sort of strategy is for how we do this. And I've heard from sort of, there's at least two sides to the elephant here. One is those strategic pathways that the president's articulated. The common common catalog is something coming from the provost, so that would be more of a sort of shared service model. In computer science, we've actually been looking at this with UAA. They have a fairly small computer science department. We have a fairly small computer science department. If we could, I mean, just the easiest way to start is to just share electives, right, that their students would take ours, our students would take theirs, and it's more options for everybody, and I think that's definitely a win-win. And to the extent that we can figure out how to sort of integrate, I mean, that's one way to sort of thrive. But we definitely need your ideas.
Okay. Thanks, Orion. Does anyone have questions for Faculty Senate or comments? And since Orion mentioned the budget, I'll just add for new members as well on the UAF Office of Management and Budget, which is where I work. On our website, we have kind of an overview of the budget process as well, and probably at least one meeting this year, we'll have an OMB person come kind of give a budget rundown to this group. But if you have kind of questions or it's a sense of, wow, this is a big giant mystery that now you're getting exposed to a bit more through staff council, there are some resources there. And then if you have any questions, feel free to bring them up. We'll try and get them answered. Thanks, Orion. All right. So really quickly, in unfinished business, with the advocacy committee, did you have anything to add or update on the mentoring interest survey? Anything new? Nothing at this time. Thanks, Jamie. And I covered the chancellor search update in my remarks earlier, and we don't have any specific committees needing representatives. I'll add for our new members, there is a requirement that every staff council member serve on a committee for staff council, whether it's one of our internal committees or an external committee that we have representation on. You'll hear during orientation this afternoon from our internal committees, who will all be trying to make pitches to you and sell you on their particular committee. So pay attention during that bit and see what sounds most interesting to you out of those groups. And then periodically opportunities will come up for external committees where we'll appoint representatives. So with that, let's take a quick 5-minute break and then come on back. So, thanks. Great. Let's go ahead and pick back up. I'm going to move internal committee reports down in the agenda for now. So just recently, we've started having our governance leadership, so the presidents of ASUAF, staff council, and faculty senate have been added to the chancellor's cabinet, which is excellent for us being kind of looped into what's happening and having feedback at that level. But chancellor's cabinet meets on Monday mornings, so that means I'll be ducking out here in about half an hour and handing the reins over to Nate for the rest of the staff council meeting this morning, and then I'll be back for our lunch and for the orientation this afternoon. So my apologies, but I don't think we have the leverage yet to move chancellor's cabinet meetings for our schedule. And I know faculty senate has their meeting this afternoon as well, so it'll be kind of shifting around. So do we have any staff achievements and highlights? For new members, this is just a time we talk about a lot of heavy issues at staff council often, and it's nice to kind of call out and recognize where staff are doing just great things as part of their everyday job. So like I mentioned earlier with the Rescuing the Arctic Energy Conference, that was an example we've had before. I don't know if anyone has any new highlights to share today. All right.
We highly encourage folks moving forward, especially new members, to keep this in mind. There's a couple different ways. You're obviously encouraged to speak up during meetings and let us know about highlights, but there's also a web form on our staff council website in which you can submit, in between meetings, you can submit highlights like this so that we make sure that they're recognized during our meetings. So if they come up, you know, in the month between meetings, you hopefully can just go on the website and enter it in the form.
Matthew?
I just see how it's a kite light. So Laura McCullough, the director of residence life, was just promoted to dean of students, which is super exciting. We're glad that they hired a dean that is within the university. They did do national recruitment, but Laura was still the best option. And Laura's a really great person. I've worked with her for all my time here at UAF. So we're just very excited that there'll be leadership at that level again, and to congratulate Laura.
Great. That's an excellent one. Thanks. All right. I'm going to move on into new business. So there are several high-profile staff awards that are open right now. The Chancellor's Cornerstone Award, the nominations are due by February 26th. Strongly encourage you to either nominate someone or talk to the people in your units and encourage them to nominate someone as well. This is a really great opportunity to recognize within UAF those staff who are just doing amazing work day in or day out and kind of going above and beyond. So this is really one kind of within UAF the most prestigious award that a staff member can get. The nominees will be presented, or the not nominees, the winner, I guess, yeah, will be presented at the Staff Development Day in May. And so we have an internal committee here that'll go through the nominations and provide, kind of winnow it down to somewhere between 2 and 5 names probably, and present those to the chancellor for him to make a determination. I served on this committee, as Nate did, a couple years ago, and it was just fantastic to see what staff are doing across the university. And I would also, for our rural reps, really encourage you guys to get the nominations in too. The year before, there was just a completely outstanding, stellar recipient from, I believe it was the Bristol Bay campus, I believe. And it was just great to be able to hear about her outstanding efforts here in Fairbanks as well, because we sometimes are a little out of the loop with what's happening with you guys. So that, if you just Google UAF Cornerstone Award, I'm sure you'll get to the form quickly, and it comes out in the newsletter, the Cornerstone newsletter, every so often too. So February 26th for those. The next one is the UA Staff Make Student Count Award. So this is the most prestigious award for staff within the entire University of Alaska system. It is presented at the Board of Regents meeting. Each university, so UAF, UAA, and UAS, and statewide, each have an individual winner. So 4 people receive the award. The winner receives, I believe, $1,000 and 2 round-trip Alaska Airlines tickets. So it's a big deal. And those nominations are due February 12th. They require a lot of work in the nomination packet, including letters from students. So if you have someone in mind and you haven't started working on it yet, I would get to work quickly and try and get that in this week. So I know we have a couple nominees already, but for the Staff Make Student Count. Oh, you don't have any. We don't have any for that yet, so definitely try and get that, because we do get one person from UAF will win, so it's certainly worth the effort to nominate someone.
Yeah, the letters don't have to be long, but the more letters you can get from students also are calculated within the scoring system. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely be thinking about that, and hopefully we'll get some strong nominations in this week. And then the last one, so I'm officially opening nominations now for the Outstanding Staff Council Achievement Award. Unfortunately, you cannot nominate either me or Nate. Officers are exempt from the award. So this is for a staff council member who's made outstanding contributions as part of their service, and I believe we present that in May as well at our May staff council meeting. So if you have questions about that, let me know, or even better work directly with Nicole. But I believe you can just, is there a form, Nicole, or do we just do email to you?
There is a form, and I'll put a, I think there's either a link on the homepage, or once I hit the green button, there will be a link on the homepage.
Great. So yeah, I strongly encourage you to nominate your peers on staff council for this award. Another brief one on new business is the proposed new regulation on telecommuting. So this is brand new. Arta Flinch, the interim chief human resources officer, has shared this for us. We didn't have any regulations about working remotely or telecommuting for UA yet, which we should have because people do it. And so I think she's, again, spending a lot of time trying to catch our regulations up with our regular practices. So this is not a big hurry item. It's not on a very tight timeline, but it would be good, I would think, if perhaps at our next meeting we could consider a resolution in support and some targeted feedback if we have any. And so I would encourage you to look that over. It's attached. It's on page 19 of your agenda. And you can share any feedback directly. Let's do this one also as a Google Doc with the edits turned to suggestions so that we can kind of track the pieces. And then that way we can see exactly where this the feedback is. So we'll share this out again for feedback.
This seems like an important one. You know, I think this probably affects some departments more than others. So this seems like a particularly important one. If you have members in your unit that do more teleworking than others, this seems important to pass along to your constituent members and to seek their feedback as well.
Definitely. And I think, yeah, try and think really critically about this. You know, I know HR is really open to working collaboratively on making this work and make sense. So if there are places where you have concerns about the responsibilities that might be assigned to the staff person, if that's reasonable, things like that, just think critically about that, and we'll get the feedback and take it up again at our next meeting to try and put something together as a formal response. We've attached, expecting that everyone has seen the communications on the travel and hiring restrictions that were announced by the president, and then we had our internal policies and procedures for that outlined by Brad Loblin for hiring and Raj Kripati for travel. So there's an FAQ, and then the internal UAF memo are attached here. Has anyone had any problems with that, or confusion, or anything they want to share on that? All right. Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. If we start seeing things, we're feeling like there are particular issues that are coming up with this that aren't being addressed, then we can always bring them up at our next meeting and discuss as needed. And then we talked a bit earlier about strategic pathways. We've attached the original memo from President Johnson, kind of outlining the big picture general idea. And like I said earlier, hopefully today we'll get the draft document and then a feedback form to start preparing it. But the idea is that basically we will differentiate more clearly between the three universities, that each university will have a lead role in a few areas as opposed to others. So, for example, UAF might be the science and engineering university. UAA might be, the example President Johnson used was a public policy university, things like that. But we still don't have anything along the lines of definitions that says what does that then mean in terms of classes, in terms of students, in terms of enrollment and advising. So I think we need to be watching very carefully for that and be poised to provide constructive feedback. So, any questions I think we probably all have 8 million questions on this. I don't think we have any answers quite yet. And then I just wanted to give an upcoming heads up. This will probably be coming through governance. With my process improvement hat on, we're looking at some additional changes to the travel process. So some of you might be familiar, we had a travel process improvement project. They went through and made recommendations. And so this is sort of a follow-up to that. And the bit that'll touch governance most closely is we're looking at the regulations, the UA travel regulations, and noticing that there are several places where we are far stricter than the state of Alaska is. For example, we require a receipt for anything over $25. The state requires it for anything over $50. And we have a maximum of $25 per trip that you can have no receipts for, and their maximum per trip is $75. So there are things like that, some things about per diem, a couple other issues that we just realized, wow, we are way harder on ourselves than we perhaps need to be. And so there'll be some proposed changes as that work team kind of goes through the process that should then be coming through governance as normal. So just a heads up, and if there's areas that you've thought of that you want to kind of chime in advance, you can just email me, and I'll try and work that in where I can. So we have Chancellor Powers here for his comments. So thank you, Chancellor.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Good morning. Just to double check, who do we have online?
Oh, and your mic, I believe.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Just to double check, who do we have online?
Chris Brooks from Juneau. And we also have Evelyn Pinsgard as well.
Okay, well, good morning to you for those who are online. A couple of quick comments, and then I'll spend a few minutes talking about strategic pathways and maybe some philosophic thoughts about that as well. As you probably know, but just for the confirmation, delighted to have named Larry Hinsman as Vice Chancellor for Research. That was a 6-8 month search, good candidates all the way around, but once Larry was named, it was interesting to see the affirmations coming from across the community, the state, the nation. He is extremely well regarded in national and international circles. And Eichen then was named IARC director. That too was very well received. Chancellor search is underway. Again, a reminder, an executive search firm has been hired. There will be visits. We're looking forward next month in March. April would be the time for finalists, and then a decision in late April, sometime in May, something like that, looking for a transition, and sometime in the summer with a natural change in academic years. A couple of other big announcements, of course, is the Arctic Science Week coming up in mid-March. That'll bring scientists from across the world to Fairbanks to showcase some of the efforts underway. In the same breath, the UAF was selected to host the 2017 Arctic Council ministerial meetings. And again, ambassadors from across the world, Senator Murkowski, a number of D.C. Representatives. Again, a great showcase for the work on the Arctic that's being done at the university. Next week, a reminder of the Board of Regents meetings, and I know there's been increased testimony over the last several meetings. It's a wonderful opportunity to communicate, express
thoughts, ideas, concerns, highlight areas that you may be working on, promote Fairbanks and UAF. I would encourage you to really think about 2 minutes. Typically, the testimony is three. This will probably, with Strategic Pathways, be a fairly lively meeting. Keep it short and succinct, but there's no better voice than staff, faculty, students, et cetera. And so I would encourage you to coordinate that testimony and the crisper and more insightful, the better. Looking at a Chancellor's Forum Tuesday, February 23rd, we have a summit meeting tomorrow, and again, the focus will be Strategic Pathways. I just want to backtrack for a minute. This idea, and I'm going to blend in the Strategic Pathway topic here in a couple of different areas. But Friday, January 22nd, there was a retreat, a Board of Regents retreat, and this idea really came forward at that time. So that's just a couple of weeks ago. And then on Tuesday, February 2nd, we were to meet in person here in Fairbanks with the chancellors, the provost, the vice chancellors for administrative services, and keep working this concept that President Johnson has unfolded. He, of course, ended up in the hospital, sets us back a little bit, and so the pathway discussion is occurring when he's not at the top of his physical game. And so that's put a challenge ahead of us as well. We will be meeting tomorrow again as a summit team, and this will take this issue up again, and we'll start to get a little bit more understanding and answer some questions about where we're headed. Let me just philosophically state for a moment. I know how confusing and ambiguous this can be, and I've talked with Faye and Nate in the past about coming from the healthcare side. There were more mergers and acquisitions last year than the year before, more the year before than the year before. The world is on end, and someone said very thoughtfully, if in this world of healthcare, the way the healthcare scene is changing, then of course you have big national initiatives, etc. If you do not have a passion for complexity and a high tolerance for ambiguity, you're just not going to survive. And that is what's happening in the healthcare world. I would attribute that to the very same thing that's happening at UAF in particular. This is a new look at how the effort of a entire system, academic system, can be streamlined, this idea of strategic pathways. But we don't have all the answers. So you're just hearing about it now, starting to understand some of the implications and ramifications of enrollment, of where students are coming from, reputation, obviously budget, streamlining, shared services. Questions go on and on and on and on. We don't have all those answers. You've heard about the concept. The ice has been broken, and that's where we are now in the process. The document that I believe went out at 9 o'clock this morning, or will go out shortly, across the top is Strategic Pathways 2016 to 2025. This is a long-term effort, and I'd like to emphasize that, too. You cannot turn on a dime, and so you're not going to see sudden stops and changes. But it is unsettling. It is uncertain. There's always questions to repeat an off-quoted generalization. Change is difficult. We all know that we're in the midst of change. High tolerance for ambiguity is needed at the moment as we find our way on this concept. It makes sense. The ice has been broken, and now we need to begin to plan more. So the degree to which you can testify at the Regents meeting, your insights, your on the front line understanding of what is happening relative to any of those number of issues I mentioned, enrollment and reputation and efficiency and savings, I would encourage you to step forward and think about effectively getting that across, either in testimony or in letters, what have you. But be thoughtful and be vocal about what you're saying. Budget process continues, of course. Again, this threads through the whole issue of strategic pathways. We have a governor's budget. We're looking at making up a $26 million gap. The previous 2 years was a $42 million gap, and so you get in total. So you get a sense of the magnitude of what we're dealing with. Unprecedented change in Alaska. We all know that. We hope to. We're working through with the Planning Budget Committee now, and I think the important thing, as we look strategically at strategic pathways, the fact that we have a budget here and now, FY17, that we have to put together and balance, and that frankly is as critical as anything, just to take care of things for this next fiscal year. But anyway, we would expect to theoretically, the legislature wraps things up in April. Certainly could be a special session. We'll receive those recommendations from the legislature in April and then finalize things. It will be a bit of a scramble at the end of the semester and finalize things by June. But we're paying close attention, obviously, to those budget deadlines. Other issues, just so you know, engineering remains the number one capital priority for the entire university system, including Anchorage. We probably are going to have to look at some other financing capitals, very, very tight. And relative to combined heat and power, those funds have been secured. We have been shut down for the winter. We restart March 1, and so you'll begin to see continued progress on a very important capital item for our aging plant. UAF is a bit behind the curve because of the age of the facilities here as opposed to the other campuses. So that's a quick update on some of the things that are happening. Any questions I might be able to answer? Yes?
So I'm representing Bradford. And one of the questions that he had here was for the UAF water, do you know when the hookup to college utilities will be complete?
I believe, I'm going to have to get back, I believe that happens this spring. It's moving forward on schedule, but I believe it is this spring that hookup occurs. I'm going to have to triple check that and get back to you.
For those of you who don't have the background on that, you've probably seen the continued notices about the water on campus that is safe to drink, but we have to be told that they're failing these certain tests. Basically, the cost of trying to resolve that problem with our own water was a lot higher than just moving over to campus or to college utilities for our water. So we're going to be switching our water supply so that it's healthier, basically, and that it meets these compliance targets. So that's the background on that. Any other questions for the Chancellor? All right, well, thank you so much.
Great, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And with that, I'm also going to now hand the meeting over to Nate, as I mentioned, and I will see hopefully all of you at noon for lunch in the room next door with our Chancellor and some of the Vice Chancellors and Provosts as well. So strongly encourage everyone to attend that lunch, and then I'll see the new members and possibly some returning members as well for orientation after that. Great.
Thanks, Faye. Joking. Announcements. As Faye mentioned, we have lunch with Interim Chancellor Powers. Also, six of the Vice Chancellors, the Provost, are going to be here. I think the only Vice Chancellor that won't be here is Mike Spraga. He's out of the country.
But I hope to see everybody here for lunch. If you're not planning on it, hopefully you can make some room for it. It'll be a good way for us to interface with university leadership, for the new members to interact with each other, for the vice chancellors to interact with some of the people that they don't normally in, you know, in their departments and such. So that's a good once a year opportunity for us as staff council reps. Second thing, staff council orientation this afternoon from 1 to 3 for new members. Current representatives, you know, that have been here, certainly welcome to attend and encouraged to meet some of the new representatives and communicate, but not required for our current reps. We have furlough is a topic at the University of Alaska system that's been kind of a hot issue for the last couple of years. I think that people are always kind of curious about how furlough can affect us. I think in particular the difference between opportunities for university to furlough employees, staff people especially, versus layoffs, I think has been something that has kind of kept this on the front burner for us. I think at this point, so we have these FAQ documents. They're attached here. They're also available on the University of Alaska HR site. So these, you know, not just for us as representatives, but also for our members in our units, these are documents that are important to circulate. So I guess I would encourage everybody as you're communicating with your units to notify them at least that these documents are available in case they have questions about furlough that you know, are more appropriate for to use these resources rather than to try and understand all these issues front and back for yourself. Oh, and then the Board of Regents meeting, as I mentioned earlier, and as Chancellor Powers talked about, this is the 18th and 19th. If you haven't been to Board of Regents meetings here before, it's in Butrovich. They're also streamed online, so you know, usually I haven't looked at this schedule. I'm not sure if it's available yet, the agenda for this meeting, for these meetings in particular, but you know, typically at the beginning of each day is the public testimony period. So again, just relaying that encouragement for people to take part in that. If you have any questions about that, feel free to let us know. And we would be happy, again, to try and coordinate multiple testimonies if they're addressing the same topic. It's always a good idea to try and convene a larger group that's concerned about a particular issue. Let's see. Performance evaluation, joint campaign committee. That's, I think that they worked for a while. I don't think that they're actually in, we don't actually have that committee currently. I think, you know, Brad talked a little bit about evaluations earlier. I think that they may, as the process, as the page up process, as the rollout gets, you know, moves forward this spring, I think that we might have some more duties for that committee, but as of now, I don't think it's meeting. We have written reports from external committees. Yeah, I think that's about it. Oh, right, internal. Yeah, so let's jump back to our internal committee reports. Elections, Brandy, would you like to?
Is this on?
Yes.
So I didn't have a written report because this was evolving up until towards the end of next week.
Sure.
There were only a couple of units that didn't get seats filled during the past election, and we actually got volunteers from the odd-numbered units that had empty seats. So I think there's only 3 open seats in all of staff council right now.
That's fantastic.
Emily is Unit 9. Cara is Unit 11, right? Katie No, you're Unit 10. Katie's Unit 9. And we have someone from Unit 15 that volunteered, too.
Online?
Christina.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. And, yeah, and then the election results were distributed to everyone. So we had a really good feel.
Yeah, I'd like to personally commend Brandy and Phil and everybody on elections. I think and everybody who was involved. I did, in my mind, for the time that I've been involved in the staff council, this has been our most successful election. So I think that's a tribute to you guys and the hard work that you did. It's been really heartening to see the people that have stepped up in units where we had vacant seats. You know, nomination process went great, and I think that our voter turnout was the highest it's been in a really long time. So thanks to you guys.
Yeah, I was really impressed by the number of people that stepped up and volunteered.
Yeah.
So we actually had several units where more than one person volunteered, so that was really great. And Nicole helped us a lot, too, so we really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody. Very nice. Okay, great. We don't have Trish here. Oh, Allie, sorry. Yeah, would you like to?
Sure. So, our last meeting was in December. We haven't met since then, but we are meeting next Tuesday, the 16th, from 2 to 3. It's a Google Hangout. Everyone's invited to join. We're still primarily focused on our bylaw review. We have one motion that will be brought forward to staff council next month. With the help of Matthew and Tamara, we've been putting together a roles, responsibilities, and expectation template for all staff council representatives, especially new members, to help give an idea of what's expected of a staff council representative. That template will be distributed today at the staff council orientation, and it's also been posted online. And
can I say just two?
Yeah.
So this is the concept behind it, especially for the new representatives. When we became representatives, we weren't quite sure exactly what our role was as a staff rep, and it's kind of trying to help fill that void. It's literally meant to be just a guiding document, not anything required. It's just to help kind of, okay, these are some common things that representatives do. This is, you know, some things I can do to be a great rep and to start your process through your 2 years on good ground and good feet. So.
Thank you, Matthew. And then for our ongoing business, we've been looking at unit reviews, but I think with this strategic pathway coming to light, that will be probably tabled until later in summer. That was our next order of business after our bylaws, so to be continued.
Great. Thanks, Ellie. Chris, would you like to say anything about rural affairs? Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. Is this where we're supposed to actually talk a little bit about what we do, or is this going to report on the last meeting?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I would just like to say to new reps that during orientation this afternoon, you know, if it's unclear about these committees and what their specific their makeup and their roles are, I think that the committee chairs will have an opportunity this afternoon during orientation to express kind of why these committees exist and typically what kind of stuff they do. So, feel free to do that now, Chris, but also there will be time this afternoon. Sorry. Is that any better? No. Stand by. I don't know. Yeah. anything now?
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, okay, great. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Chris. I don't know if you heard, but I was just kind of expressing that we will have time for committee chairs to talk about the overview of committees this afternoon during orientation. But if there's anything in particular you want to say about that now, feel free.
Okay, quick question. Are we going to be involved in that remotely?
I assume so, but...
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll just give a short introduction here. My name is Chris Brooks. I'm the IT Support Administrator for the School of History and Motion Sciences. I serve as the Chairman of the Rural Affairs Committee. I would like to move a point to the school in general. I'd like to also welcome each and every one of you, as well as my co-host, this three group. I think it's a pleasure to have you on today. Basically, the Rural Affairs Committee, what our responsibility is to represent campuses that all those facilities and campuses around the state that they do not reside in Fairbanks. We oversee the general welfare of those campuses and facilities, and we also monitor all activities in compliance with the College of Rural Affairs City Rural and Community Development Mission of the state. Some of the things that we work on are issues that are specific to rural campuses. In particular, right now we're actually working on a survey to see. I'm getting some feedback here.
We're fine here. I think that.
Okay, I think it's the mic or mute the microphone. Okay. Some of the things that we worked on with the tobacco policy, tobacco-free policy implementation, I'm pleased to say that many of our rural campuses actually have already been observing that policy before it came in for us in December 2015. We also have issues that are unique to rural campuses and facilities. Some of these things can include, like, some of these offices only have in their office. They may have they have specific needs that can be quite different from the needs of other campuses or main campuses. Right now, we're working on that survey to gather that information. One of the things that's happening here is that people should be able to report problems or concerns. Without a fear of retribution or any kind of issues of that sort. So that's what we're working on now. And if you have any questions or we're not, please feel free to get with me at any time. We'll be happy to talk to you about it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chris. Anybody have any questions for Chris in particular about the issues or about the committee? All right, yeah, go ahead. I'll let him answer. The question, Chris, I guess, is just are you as a committee handling how the tobacco-free policy is communicated and regulated on the rural campuses? That was the question.
Okay, well, it's the same as the university policy. I believe it was Brad Church has the link to that policy, how it was outlined. The enforcement, this is quite interesting. I actually was involved in an enforcement situation here. And realistically, basically in a nutshell, it's, you know, politely remind someone, someone who's doing that. And that includes, it's all tobacco products, not just smoking. It's against policy, that kind of thing, communicated in a nice manner, in hopes to avoid an issue. If someone continues on that path and continues to do that, then it's necessary that we should report that to their superior, whomever it is, a professor, an advisor, a manager, a supervisor, whatever.
And how has the feel been across the board where you're at and here locally to address these to the people in the room? Since the changeover, has anybody seen a change or any negativity?
Sure. I'll relay the question again, maybe to Chris first, and then I guess I would open it up to the rest of the staff council. But I guess the question, Chris, is just how in your opinion, how has the response been, just in general, to the policy? Has there been feedback directly from staff people or anybody else?
Yeah. My biggest concern when we implemented this policy was the fact that there was a lack of clear enforcement. You know, that if someone was violating the policy, what is the repercussions for that? What are the consequences? That really wasn't clear to me. But I think really the position was that, you know, it was going to be a cooperative environment within the university system. For the most part, that's what we've seen. Like I said, I was really fascinated to hear that Mercer Rural Campuses had already implemented that policy far before. It actually went into effect. But one of the differences is that a lot of these communities or facilities, these were locked and not a big part of the university stock. So it really wasn't the deal for them. But you on the campus, we all know that. Quite a
good attack.
But yeah, everything
has worked
pretty well
since then. Right on. Yeah, thanks. That's good to hear. Anybody else? I guess I would. Yeah, Matthew.
So, from a perspective of the on campus residents, which are what our main kind of concern for this policy from a life perspective. It's surprisingly during the day, there's actually like almost complete compliance. Like we don't really have any issues with it. We haven't really seen any problems. There's been really heavy advertising. We do have a problem at night though, because of we've removed all the ashtrays. People still go outside and smoke at night and then throw them on the ground. So it's for our on-campus residents going to your car, especially in the middle of the night when nobody else is out there and they just go do what they want to. The most recent kind of protest was sticking them into the snow in front of the MBS complex in a nice row just to make people aware that they were doing it. So I think that's interesting during the day when we're all here. It's not a problem, but at night is when we're seeing the debris.
Yeah. That's when the sun goes down, danger comes out. Thanks for a quick cat. Is it cat?
Yeah, I'll go by cat.
Thank you. Yeah, good question. I guess that's something that we'll be continuing to monitor. I'm not sure. Thanks, Chris. For staff affairs, I'm not sure if Jane's here, but Samara, you want to?
Hello?
I think I hear it.
Hello?
I think that's on.
Is it?
I think so. I think I can hear it out of the...
Okay. I have a pretty quiet voice normally, so I want to make sure the mic's working.
It is working, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's
it. Staff affairs met January 15th. If you're following along, that's page 17 of the agenda. And we spent almost the entire meeting discussing the review of layoff and recall decision. The fact that we spent over an hour going back and forth about one particular paragraph made us think that we really need some clarification. So we submitted it to Faye, and she's going to pass that along to Artis Lynch. To give you an example, one of the sentences, so to clarify, this is, as a staff member, what your recourse is if you're laid off, what happens. Let's say you think that you were laid off and you shouldn't have been, or it was whatever reason, you have a dispute with the layoff. One of the sentences reads, the reviewer is never obligated to provide for a different procedure, but may elect to do so with respect to some or all of the issues raised by creating a new procedure or by adopting or by modifying an existing procedure. So we all had different ideas about what that meant, and so we really would like that clarified. You can look through the whole report. There are a couple of other issues we had, but we felt like we needed to start there and move forward. And so that's the gist of what we discussed in our last meeting.
Thanks, Mara.
Sure.
Anybody else? Any questions? Okay. Great. And then for advocacy, I know, Jim, you have a report here. Is there anything you'd like to add or call attention to? Okay. I would just call attention to the advocacy committee report. Is it attached? Yeah. Okay. Great. Back to. I guess we're ready for roundtable. Oh, hi, Leslie. Hey. Oh, sure. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Okay, that's great. That's all good news. Thanks for giving us the update. Any questions for Leslie in healthcare? Okay. Anybody else from external committees who would like to provide an update that's not included in the agenda? Okay. Thanks. Go ahead.